In 2012, the planet Venus will pass directly between the Sun and the Earth. This transit of Venus won't occur again until the year 2117. My name is Troy Klein, and welcome to Sun Earth Day 2012, Shadows of the Sun. Many of our NASA missions play an enormous part in telling that incredible story, the story of our dynamic solar environment. In this podcast, we'll continue our series about the RESI mission with Dr. Lindsay Fletcher. Dr. Fletcher is a solar physicist who holds a faculty position at the University of Glasgow in Scotland. I ask Lindsay to tell us more about her study of solar flares and how her work ties into the RESI mission.
So I study these solar flares, which are violent explosions, events of energy release on the Sun, and I'm particularly interested in how they appear when you look at them in the optical part of the spectrum, so what you would see if you looked at a flare with your eyes, which of course you never do, and the ultraviolet part of the spectrum. And I'm interested in how that supports and complements the observations that most people here at this meeting are making in the X-ray part of the spectrum. So we've been kind of exploring that a little bit. And the reason we're going in that direction, I mean, X-rays are fantastic. This RESI mission has just been a wonderful, eye-opening, revolutionary mission in enabling us to image the X-ray sources and understand their spectrum. But the fact remains that imaging X-rays, making a picture in X-rays, is difficult. It's a difficult technical job, and it's full of problems and uncertainties, which, you know, we're really doing our best to get on top of. But imaging in optical and imaging in ultraviolet is simple comparatively. You just have a big camera, a big telescope, like a ground-based telescope, and the information that you get from that is pretty easy to understand in some ways, and kind of provides a wonderful backup and a wonderful sort of second eye on the fundamental acceleration processes and energy release processes in solar flares.
I thought it would be interesting to ask Lindsay to tell us how RESI data helps her with her research and how that research impacts our lives here on Earth.
Well, RESI helps with research, with my research in particular, because RESI images X-rays, the kind of X-rays that we get dosed with if we go to the doctors, and also even higher energy X-rays. It images X-rays, and we know that these X-rays are produced by electrons, fundamental particles, electrons, which have been accelerated during solar flares. And we also know that those electrons carry a huge fraction of all of the energy which is released in a solar flare. So there's a kind of chain from the electrons to the X-rays to RESI. And so by looking at RESI, we can understand something, at least, about this acceleration process. And that acceleration process is part of the overall energy release process, the way that the Sun's atmosphere gets rid of its excess magnetic energy. Part of that energy comes out in electrons, a big part of the energy comes out in electrons. Another big part of that energy comes out in coronal mass ejections. That's really the aspect which I guess impacts us most on Earth, the coronal mass ejection, which is connected to the X-rays in a way we don't quite understand, but we're getting there. And so you've maybe heard about space weather, the whole phenomenon of space weather. And space weather, actually, interestingly enough, was first recognised, I guess, in 1851.
Really?
Yes, 1851. There was a flare, a solar flare, which was observed in white light, which is the optical part of the spectrum that I'm interested in, by Carrington, Richard Carrington, who was a rich amateur astronomer in England, and he was observing the Sun, and he saw this white light flare, and he marked it, you know, he noted it, he called in his assistant to try and verify the observation, but you know, the thing was fading just at the time. But there's some wonderful existing drawings of this white light flare. So it was also noted that a few moments later, the magnetograph at the magnetometer at Kew Gardens showed this huge deflection. A few minutes after the solar flare was seen, so like 7-8 minutes later, there was this big deflection of the magnetograph, and we recognise that now as what happens to the ionosphere, the upper atmosphere of the Earth when the X-rays and the ultraviolet from that flare arrive. They ionise the ionosphere and the upper atmosphere of the Earth, and that creates electrical currents which create a magnetic field which is measured as a deflection by the magnetometer. So this combination of the white light observation by Carrington and the magnetometer records from 1851 already told us that there was, back then, that there was this thing called space weather. Although you have to recognise in 1851, a lot of people did not like this idea that the sun, which is at such a great remove, could really influence the magnetic environments of Earth. So that is a really interesting part of history, I think. But as well as that abrupt event, that abrupt deflection, about 18 hours later, there was a colossal auroral display on Earth. Red aurora visible during the daytime as far south as Buenos Aires. Really amazing auroral display. And that was the other part. That was the coronal mass ejection that was unleashed by the flare, but took longer to travel through space and impact the Earth, where it also made the magnetometer go crazy and also made these auroral displays. So that the flare, the coronal mass ejection and its effects on Earth are part of a kind of sequence of events that we really want to try and understand.
Towards the end of the interview, I asked Lindsay to tell us who or what influenced her the most to pursue a career in science.
I mean, the first time I can really recollect that I decided I wanted to do science, I actually wanted to do physics, I was never interested very much in biology or chemistry, was when I was in, I would have been about 14 in what we call secondary school in the UK, and I was just deciding which subjects I was going to take for my higher examinations, and physics was always going to be one of them. And so I remember that decision. I remember reading this publication we have, The New Scientist, and always wanting to go to the physics articles. I cut all the physics articles out and put them in a folder. This was, of course, in the days before the internet. So my physics teachers, Mr. Williams and Mr. Grant, they both encouraged this interest, and in fact Mr. Grant gave me a book by Fred Hoyle about astronomy, and I started reading this and I just thought, this is great, this is fantastic stuff. And so it really was at that point I decided that I was going to do at least physics as a career and astronomy. We had to take three subjects in our first year at university. So you did physics, you did maths, you did a third subject. So that was going to be astronomy, maybe geology, but I think it was astronomy already at that point. But further back, my father tells me that I'd pointed out to him when I was about 5 years old. I'd pointed out to him that when you're on Earth and you look at the stars, they just look like tiny little circles. But if you had a big telescope, you would see they had 5 points, just like, you know, the sticky stars you put on your... So maybe at that point I was starting to think about, you know, angular resolution, I don't know. But so I was conscious of the moon and the stars as a little child, despite living in quite a populated city, the city of Glasgow. I guess I do remember looking at things in the sky when I was little. I remember looking at satellites going ahead and wondering if there was Sputnik and that kind of thing. But definitely by the, you know, my early teenage years, and influenced by my teachers to great physics.
We'd like to thank Dr. Fletcher for taking time to talk with us today and look forward to future podcasts about the RESI mission. You can also read a great interview about her at www.solarweek.org. You can find all of the information about this year's theme, Shadows of the Sun, on the Sun Earth Day website at sunearthday.nasa.gov. We'll continue to populate that website with the latest information about our upcoming programs, background resources, activities, and registration information. With the help of our friends from the Solar Dynamics Observatory mission, we've even included a new events-based Google Map. One of our main goals is to help you join thousands of people in learning more about the transit of Venus on June 5th and 6th of 2012, and then again for a total solar eclipse on November 13th and 14th, 2012. Upcoming podcasts will include interviews with additional NASA scientists, astronomers, educators, and media specialists from the award-winning NASA EDGE team. Don't forget to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter to join in on the discussion with our growing Sun Earth Day community. For all other details about the Sun Earth Day program, including information about our past Sun Earth Day themes, be sure to visit our website at sunearthday.nasa.gov. While there, don't forget to register in order to receive Sun Earth Day updates. You can learn more about NASA by simply visiting www.nasa.gov.
This is Troy Klein signing off.